Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to know.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
In the midst of a very busy Harrah's World Series of Poker Room, six tables full of tournament players, six tables full of cash game players, and a bad beat jackpot that is back into six figures as well. I am Paul Harrah, sitting aside Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips. The poker coach Joe McGowan will join us in a little while. And also later on, another Joe, Joe Seebach, the guy behind Poker Road, the star of Fox Sports Net's Poker Tonight, getting off a plane in Los Angeles now. And as soon as he grabs his bags, he'll grab his cell phone and he'll join us in a little while. We have a lot of stuff to talk about on the show today, including the debut of High Stakes Poker a couple of nights ago, the North American Poker Tour, which Dennis and I are both headed to. You're leaving tomorrow, aren't you?
I am leaving tomorrow.
Yeah, and I'll be out there on Thursday, and then the big 5K event will start on Saturday. We're both looking forward to playing in that. I want to start the show today with a listener email from a listener named Greg, who listens to the podcast every week from thechipleader.com, and says, Paul, I know that you and Dennis like to avoid telling a bunch of bad beat stories, but you have to ask Dennis about the hand that essentially knocked him out of the Sunday Million tournament on PokerStars this week. So this guy was railing you, watching you play, and he says, you've got to ask him about this. I'd love to hear his thoughts. All right, Greg.
He doesn't describe the hand at all?
Tell me what happened.
Well, it ended up, it wasn't as bad a play as you first think about when you see it. The hand I believe he's talking about there, I had an ace-queen, as it turned out, the other gentleman across from me, had a middle pair, had sevens on it. Pre-flop raise and call. Flop comes queen with two rag behind it. This gentleman, who had position ahead of me, just shoved. I called with a top pair and top kicker. He turned over a pair of sevens.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the river card was the third seven.
Uh-huh.
The two outer on the river.
Uh-huh.
But if you actually look at it, if I hadn't cut the queen, if I didn't have something like that, very likely could have folded there. It wasn't a bad move on his place. He just got caught with his fingers in the cookie jar, shall we say.
Do you find when you're playing in those online tournaments on Stars that you find people who are making what some people might consider unorthodox plays, people shoving with, you know, maybe an open-ended straight draw or something like that?
Oh, they do what I term them probability bets. Basically, the odds on you catching a flop are fairly thin.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had missed the flop, if the queen wasn't out there, obviously, then he takes the whole pile down. Even if I'd have had nines or tens or jacks or something, I probably would have folded.
Right.
So it's not a bad move at all. But when you catch the flop, then, of course, you don't look too great. You get lots of nice comments from the railbirds on those.
Yeah. Was that the hand that knocked you out of the tournament?
Yes, it was. Yeah. And it would have put me fairly deep into the tournament in that. Yeah. It was. I wasn't very happy.
Yeah,
to put it politely.
Now, I mentioned that we're both headed back to Vegas. It's my first time there in a few months, but it's only going to be your first time in about 48 hours. You just got back last night from Vegas, didn't you?
I'll be in St. Louis for a total of about 36 hours this time.
Yeah, what were you doing out there?
Well, I had some meetings with some PokerStars executives. We had some other things to check and make sure on the NAPT, make sure it's going smoothly. Just a lot of cleaning up some small items.
Did you get into any deep stack events at the Venetian while you were there?
I did. I played, I got in, oh boy, I think it was about 11 o'clock when I got there. There's one started at 12, and of course, you know me. So at 12:05 or whatever, I'm sitting down at the table and playing.
What, a 550 buy-in?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
On that. Didn't last that long. Actually, could have played it a little better on that one, I have to admit.
Yeah.
I sat down. You had 15,000 in starting chips. Within 20 minutes of sitting down there, I was up to 40,000.
Wow.
There was a guy who was just, I thought it was so obvious he was bluffing, it was ridiculous, and I called him with third pair on the river.
Uh-huh.
And he turned over ace-jack nothing, and I had a 7-8. I think I'd caught a 7 on the board is what it was on that. And, so I got a lot of oohs and ahs at the table on that, but I actually didn't think it was that hard of a call
yeah.
on that, and that helped me. And then a couple other hands I did. And then, of course, my favorite hand came, and I really, really misplayed the hand.
My favorite hand, you don't mean the dreaded ace-king, do you?
You got it. Absolutely.
What happened?
The guy at the table who had been catching cards. He'd had aces, he'd had kings, he'd had jacks all in the last, within like a 15-minute span or something like that. He raised again pre-flop as he'd been doing. No problem. I looked down at ace-king. I came over the top.
Suited, unsuited?
Who cares at this stage?
Okay, so you shoved.
No, I didn't. Did not. I re-raised him.
Okay.
He turned around and, without hesitation, re-raised me, which, again, I'd seen him do a couple other times, one time with an ace-queen, and laid it down. Well, I just wasn't going to let this guy run all over me. By gosh, I'm going to show him who's boss.
Uh-oh.
So I shoved.
Uh-huh.
And somehow or other, with his two aces, he called me.
He found it in his heart that he figured he could play those two aces there pre-flop for all the money?
Yeah, just a minor little thing like that.
Yeah, so you're drawing dead.
Well, not dead, but...
Practically
well
dead.
Me, yeah.
Oh, no, we learned last summer that ace-king is not a dead hand.
This is true.
But for you, it is.
Yeah, not one of my finest moments at a poker table, let me tell you that.
You know, since I went out a few months ago with an ace-king and you ragged me about it after I had been ragging you about it, I want to make a prop bet with you.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Starting now, and it's up to you whether we just do it for this upcoming trip to the NAPT and then the week that we're going to be in Vegas, or we can make it longer if you want.
Okay. What's that?
You pay off. You lose the bet if you get knocked out of a tournament with ace-king.
All right, here's what we'll do.
And I'm talking about getting all the money in pre-flop. I'm not talking about your flop comes ace-king four, and you put it in with top two pair, and you...
The guy's got pocket fours.
Yeah, or he, you know, has 3-5 and catches the deuce for the killer gut shotter.
Yeah,
I'm
something.
Not talking about that sort of thing.
Okay.
I'm talking about you get it in pre-flop with ace-king, and the next thing you know, you're walking away from the table.
This is the way we'll do it. We won't put a time limit on it. We will do it until one or the other of us it happens to. Because you know it's going to. Probably me.
Okay.
But we'll do it that way.
All right.
Do the bet. Prop bet.
Like $1,000?
You name the figure.
Okay. That's a good number. Nice round number for me.
I figure you're an 80-20 favorite on this thing, probably.
Well, the way you play ace-king too much, that's what I'm thinking here. I'm absolutely giving myself a better chance.
I also play a...
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm mucking ace-king to a 4-bet. Anybody who's in a tournament with me, if I 3-bet you and you 4-bet me and I have ace-king, I am insta-mucking there. I don't care how much it cost to buy into the tournament.
I should just pay you off now. I mean, why drag myself through this thing? I ought to just pay you off now. Actually, I'm going to bribe some dealer to stack the deck against you or something.
Now, here's the thing. I'm not there all the time when you're playing a tournament, and you're not there when I'm playing a tournament, so we're having a, you know... This is an honor bet.
Well, yeah, of course.
Okay. I trust you. You trust me.
Yeah, but the problem is mine will probably end up on Card Player or something, so, you know.
Now, there's no chance you're going to play a game between now and when we play on Saturday, is there?
Me?
No, tournament.
Oh, tournament. No, probably not a tournament. No.
Okay, and we're talking only about tournaments, not cash.
Because obviously.
That's a very different thing. Okay.
Yeah. All right, there you go.
Because we've talked about this hand. I think the only other hand we've talked about more often on this show is ace-jack, because we have so many listeners emailing us hands with ace-jack where, what did I do wrong here? And Joe, the poker coach, who we'll bring on in a second, always says, you know what you did wrong there? You played ace-jack. Okay, so we'll do that.
Okay, sounds good.
And the other Vegas-related thing is, have you found out yet from Maury Escandani, the executive producer of so many shows, including the World Series of Poker Europe coverage, which looks great on Sunday nights on ESPN after High Stakes Poker on GSN. He produces the WSOP e-coverage. He produces Poker After Dark. He produces High Stakes Poker. And he produces the NBC
Heads Up
Championship, which you're going to take part in, which, by the way, is the reason we can't do the poker clinic we were planning on doing here in St. Louis on March 6th, because you'll be in Vegas that weekend. Have you heard from Maury about who's going to be in the rest of the 64 people in that Heads Up Championship?
They sent me the listing of them.
Yeah.
With the exception of a few qualifiers who they haven't got the names for yet, I have the complete listing. I think I have 56 names that are going to be there on it. And it literally reads like a who's who of poker. If you name, I challenge you to name more than four top pros, and I guarantee three of them will be on here.
Okay.
So it's just that sick of a lineup almost.
So when you look down that lineup, do you think to yourself, well, I don't want to play him. I don't want to play him. I mean, we already talked about the Huck Seeds of the world.
I looked three times in here for Jason Alexander and couldn't find him. Yeah.
Jason's not on the list.
Jason's not on the list. No.
How about some of the other friends of poker stars like Oral Hershiser?
Oral's on there. Oral will be playing there.
Yeah.
I will try to become friends with Oral at the table.
Yeah.
You know? And he's a good guy, by the way. Really good guy.
Any former champions who maybe have not lived up to a lot of acclaim? I mean, we know that...
what year?
Drew a blank. Joe, Australia. Joe Hashem.
Joe Hashem, yeah.
I mean, he's got to be on the list.
Joe will be. They're all there. Chris Moneymaker, Greg Raymer, Joe Hashem, Joe Cotta, Jerry Yang, Jamie Gold. They're all there.
Okay, I think we named at least one person there who you wouldn't mind seeing across the table.
Well, if I got to choose between Chris Ferguson, Huck Seed, and like a Jerry Yang,
yeah,
I got my choice.
Although... You know, there's a downside to this, which is that in poker, anything can happen. The cards can happen at any time. You're mm-hmm. you're playing only you know, a best of three championship,
oh,
and anything can happen. You could push with ace king, and he's got aces. It's been known to happen. You know, if you lose to a Chris Ferguson or a Huck Seed, okay, they're the greatest heads up players in the world.
There you go.
You lose to Jerry.
Now, maybe I don't want Jason's name on here. Then you're right.
I'm just saying.
I played the 5K shootout in the World Series this last year. Got down heads up at our table. Shootout's where you play down to one person, and then the person advances rather than combining tables.
Right.
I got heads up with a gentleman. I looked down at pocket queens. All in pre-flop. He turns a king deuce over. King right out there.
Boom.
On it.
Yeah.
Boom.
See?
You know, so it happens.
It can absolutely happen
yeah.
all the time. All right, so you'll be going out there
yes.
almost right after we get back from the NAPT. And by the way, we are going to be doing special shows from the Venetian. Next week's show will not be live from Harrah's St. Louis.
Correct.
We're going to try to do a whole bunch of interviews with a whole bunch of these big poker players who will
yep.
be in Vegas later this week for the NAPT, and that'll be next Tuesday's show, and we'll probably record stuff to use on future shows
and
as
one
well.
Of the things we're going to ask a majority of these players out there will be, what advice can they give for the person in St. Louis going to his first major tournament?
Yes.
Let's see if we can't get like 30-second snippets from them. You know, what would they recommend?
Because come April, the first 2 weeks of April, this
there
room and the room we're looking out through the window here, from the giant walled-in poker room to all the way outside to the floor, will be completely covered with poker tables and poker players coming here for the first ever St.
Yep.
Louis Harrah's St. Louis World Series of Poker Circuit event.
Oh, this is the first thing for St. Louis, period. I mean, this is going to be a major tournament.
Absolutely.
They've never had anything like this in St. Louis.
And you know what? When we get Seebach on here, he's got a lot of tournament experience.
There you go.
We'll ask him as well.
Perfect.
This is the final table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. The poker coach joins us, and we'll talk about high-stakes poker in a moment. But first, this portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.net, where you can play against some of the guys we'll be in Vegas playing against in the NAPT. Do you know who's going to be there from Stars, by the way?
I do. I do know a number of them. Chris Moneymaker will be there. Greg Raymer will be there. Daniel Negreanu will be there. Barry Greenstein will be there. I mean, the list goes on and on. Vanessa will be there.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a heck of a thing. I had a little prop bet about 720 for my guests from the main event.
Yeah, that's how many you thought would be there in the big 5K?
I was way wrong.
Yeah?
They're expecting over 800 in that.
Wow.
Now. It's going to be over a $4 million prize pool in this thing.
Nice.
This NAPT is going nuts. I tell you, it's sort of like what's going on with PokerStars itself. Do you realize they are now approaching their 40 billionth hand?
What?
40 billion. I said that with a B.
Yeah.
Yes. Years ago, 1 billion would have been an amazing number for somebody to have on this thing.
Right.
They are now approaching 40 billion, and it's going up by millions and millions every day.
Mm-hmm.
Before the end of the month, they will hit that 40 billion. It's unbelievable.
Are they doing something special? If I'm in the 40 billionth hand, will I win something?
You will be very, very happy. Now, you can go on there. You can be playing for free. You can be learning the game. You can sit in any of these tournaments you want on PokerStars.net,
yep.
and that will qualify.
I think they're still running qualifiers for this weekend.
That actually ends, I think, today.
Today's the last day.
Yeah, today's the last day
yeah,
on
so
that.
So those of you listening to us live, not listening to the podcast later in the week,
uh-huh.
but if you're listening to us live today on 590 The Fan KFNS, you can go into PokerStars.net right now and maybe win a trip to Vegas with us this weekend.
I haven't seen a final figure, but somewhere around 400 people that are qualified online that get the trip out there for the hotel room, for the airfare, for the buy-in to it, and the party the night before on Friday.
Very nice.
Yes, it's going to be very, very good. So
we're happy to have PokerStars.net as a sponsor of the final table. I'm Paul Harris. He's Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. And this is the poker coach, Joe McGowan, joining us from Southern California. Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing great, Paul. How are you guys doing?
Doing rather well. I had a little jet lag, but, you know.
You've Joe, been a busy guy as always, Dennis. I don't know how you do it, buddy.
Joe, today for our poker coach segment, I want to talk a little about high-stakes poker, which I know you and I got to see, but Dennis was so busy over the weekend, he didn't get a chance to see it. And I want to talk in particular about Phil Hellmuth. But before we do that, I wonder what you think of the new format without A.J. Benza, with Gabe Kaplan kind of doing it alone in the booth and Kara Scott doing the interviews down on the floor. Do you like it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I liked it before. I like it now. You know, I like both. I think it's great now, and I think it was good before. You know, he added a little bit of color, and, you know, it seems like, I guess, Gabe's doing it by himself now pretty much, right? And she just kind of works the floor. Is that the deal?
Yeah, it started out with that wide shot of where it used to be Gabe and AJ standing together, and there was no AJ there, and then it kind of zoomed in and made it into a one shot of just Gabe. I think it's a little weird hearing Gabe doing this without anybody kind of feeding him feeding him straight lines.
Yeah. Well, you know, my view, like I said, I kind of like both. I suppose I can see what you're saying now that you said it.
But we get a lot more table talk out of this, and since we're going to see Dennis on High Stakes Poker next month, we can't talk much about it, but I'm curious, do the producers tell you before you're going in there, we expect you to talk a lot at the table, and are they encouraging you during the show?
Maury and the guys out there are just flat-out excellent. It was the first time I was there. Obviously, the other guys had been there a number of times. They said, just be yourself, sit and relax, enjoy it. We don't expect you to do anything special, no special banter or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Just do whatever you're comfortable with. Which was very, very nice of him. And I went out there, and I had a heck of a good time. And he said, well, we're going to invite you next year. And I said, I'll be here.
Wow.
So, cool.
Very, very nice. We'll find out how Dennis does next month, by the way, when those episodes air, kind of in the middle of the 13. But let's talk about this past Sunday night, the first episode of season number 6. And I'll just come flat out and ask you, Joe, were you surprised at how Phil Hellmuth played against the rest of this table, ending up going broke, losing all $200,000 he had brought with him?
Well, I think coming into it, he might have been a little tilty, you know, coming into it. He's really, you know, it's probably like, what, 3 years ago he started getting beaten up in the poker community that he was a bad player against good players. And then I think he kind of rebuilt his reputation and did pretty good in some of the big events, some of the high-stakes stuff and some of the events you'd watch on TV, kind of rebuilt his reputation. And I think he's really brought a lot of this on himself. I mean, they really pick on him. I mean, everybody makes fun of him. You know, Gabe was really ripping him right from the start. And
all the
players are constantly ripping him. What's that?
I almost felt sorry for Phil Hellmuth. Almost.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of agree, except he certainly brings it on himself, you know. You almost have to say that. When you get a guy coming in and he's sitting down with those players, and certainly, you know, not all of the players that are there are so established, you know, but man, you know, to sit down with those guys and every interview talk about how you're the best and the greatest, and you know, you're really asking for it. And I think, you know, players like Daniel and those guys, they've really let him have it for the last year. But you know, I think so going in, I think he was a little tilty, and I think it was really interesting. The first four hands that they show with Phil, it kind of goes to what his tracker record would be. You know, he's showing ace jack and ace queens.
Yep.
You know, he loses all four. But then, you know, at the end, I know this is TV land and there are a lot of other hands, but he loses with king deuce and I think it was like jack five or something, you know, later in the show, which we'll probably talk about. But, you know, to go from playing premium hands and quality hands to, you know, playing tight and then maybe a little tilty, maybe, to get involved with the king deuces and the jack fives, and then he went nuts with another hand versus Ivy, cost him a fortune on a kind of semi-bluff. You know, I don't know what he was doing, but he definitely wasn't happy, and he has had a little bit of tilt in a couple of the other episodes, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, let's talk about two of these hands. First, the one where Antonio Esfandiari limps under the gun with ace of spades, queen of spades, and I assume Antonio's doing that because he's willing to play this hand for a raise, but he's not going to play it for 3-bet or 4-bet, which it could be with this table. You got Gus Hansen, you got Tom Dwan, you got Phil Ivey, you got Daniel Negreanu. These are guys who love to play action flops. Dario Minieri is next. He limps with a pair of threes behind Antonio. Phil Hellmuth then calls with the king of spades and deuce of spades. Andreas Hoivold, this young guy from Norway, limps behind him with the King Deuce of Clubs. Daniel Negreanu, then on the button, limps with the King of Hearts and Ten of Clubs. And then Gus completes from the small blind with 6-4 offsuit. And Tom Dwan in the big blind, I was surprised Tom didn't actually come over the top here with all that dead money in there. But he just taps the table, and we go seven-handed to a flop. Dwan, by the way, had the seven of hearts and four of diamonds. Now the flop comes out, seven of diamonds, six of spades, five of spades, which hits about half the table. I mean, the only people who are not involved in this, Daniel Negreanu with the king 10 and Dario with the 3-3, he would only have a gut shot. But you get Antonio with the nut flush draw, Phil with the second nut draw, Gus, who's hit, you know, a pair and an inside straight, and Dwan, who's got a pair and an inside straight. So Dwan opens the betting in the big blind for 3,800. Antonio calls, Phil calls, everybody else folds. The turn comes the eight of spades, which could be completing a straight, but also gives both Antonio and Phil the flush. Antonio now leads out for 11,100 after Dwan had checked. Antonio makes it 11,100. Phil Hellmuth just calls with the second nut flush, and Tom Dwan then folds. Now you got about 40,000 in the pot. The river is the inconsequential 10 of hearts. Antonio then bets 32,000. And remember, Phil Hellmuth has the second nut flush here with the king deuce of spades. Most players in that situation are probably going to press a little bit, but Phil just calls and, of course, loses to Antonio's nut flush. Now, as I describe that hand, and we go back over it, guys, are you amazed that Hellmuth isn't losing more, or are you more amazed that he's getting involved in a pot with King Deuce to begin with? Joe?
Okay. Dennis, I'm giving you a shot to go first.
It doesn't matter. You want me to?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. We'll mix it up.
Mean, go ahead. Actually, several things you said there are very good. The fact that Antonio just called with the ace-queen of spades, he has the opportunity then to raise to a re-raise if he wants to try and eliminate people. He does keep it small. You're absolutely right. With that kind of a lineup, these guys could 3X with, I'm sorry, Dario with his pocket threes could have easily gone over the top some.
Yep.
So, you know.
I think there had 7-4 actually there.
No, he said Dario.
Dario
had a pair of
Dario,
a pair of threes.
Excuse me. Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, no problem. But Dwan here played it very well. He had the low end of it, but he did end up with a straight on the turn. Didn't lose any more money to it. Got out of the thing. It was fairly well played, except what the heck is Phil doing in there with an ace or king deuce of spades? I don't care what position you are and everything like that.
First of all, it's unlike Phil, unless he, as Joe is saying, is, you know, he's stuck and now he's playing tilty. He does get himself in these kind of situations.
He does.
As, by the way, do a lot of players. Far too many people, and I've been guilty of this, I know, maybe you guys have too. You're stuck. You're trying to come from behind. You see two suited cards, and you figure, what the heck? I'm going to play this, and maybe I make the flush.
And I don't know if that's what he was thinking or not. I do know. I mean, I played with Phil a number of times. I do know that given an average table or a beginning table of a tournament, because of his reputation, because he can outplay people after the flop, he does play a lot of hands you won't see him playing later in a tournament. What I don't understand is why he's playing these hands against this caliber of players on that. All it can do is get you in trouble. Speaking of which, I played a couple of those hands, so I better be careful what I say on it.
Okay.
But usually when I was doing it, I was trying to do it late in action, and I was doing it with, you know, there was some reason in my own mind, at least I could justify, and I could get away from him easily on that. The fact that he just called on the river, he had to have some sort of feeling that he was in trouble there. Because normally a second nut flush, second nuts, period, on that, because there wasn't a pair on the board.
Right.
So, I mean, the only hand that could beat him is the ace flush.
Yep. What do you say, Joe?
Well, I think that, Phil Hellmuth played the hand horribly and played it really good. I mean, it's amazing that he didn't lose more money. There's no doubt about that. You're sitting there at the second nut flush. Anybody else on the table is going to lose more money. It's just a question if it's all of it. You know, all the other guys, they're not going to just call the turn, just call the river. You know, Durr is going to be all in there likely in a second. You know, he plays so aggressively, and nine times out of ten, you're good there with the second nut flush. So that's pretty much how he plays, just, you know, foot to the floor when he thinks he's got it. And why wouldn't you think you got it? Although, you know, from my point of view, when on the turn the 8 comes, Antonio bets 11,000, it was just a hair over half the pot. I'm going off memory. I hope I'm right on this. Which is a little bit of a betting pattern tell. And I'm just trying to come up with reasons of how did Phil not lose more money. So in my view, how did he not lose more money? Well, on the turn, Antonio led for a little over half the pot. And I think when players make, you know, that type of bet, and remember, this was huge multi-way action. He was in there from the flop, so he's got to have something. And he's up front, Antonio. He's got to have something. So now the spade comes, and now he bets a little over half the pot. When players bet usually a little over half a pot, it's usually a scared bet or a super strong bet. In general, not always, but probably 70-80% I'd give this one. This is a betting pattern tell to me.
Yep.
So follow that up with the river bet now of $32,000 into a $40,000 pot. That's, you know, pretty big bet given the situation. It's a pretty big bet. So now you take those two things together, you're like, geez, you made kind of a scared kind of small bet, or was it a scared bet or a trapping please call me bet? But now I call you, and now the river, you make a big bet. Geez, you know, you got to have it, you know. And I'm sitting here with the second nut flush, coupled perhaps with some other things. You know, Phil wears the glasses and he definitely reads people, and I do think there might have been a couple other small things going on there that Antonio might have given off physically to let Phil be able to just call there. I do think it's interesting, if you watch the show, I'm pretty sure the hand before, Phil Hellmuth had lost a hand, a big hand where he got involved, where, you know, something happened to him and he lost another hand. Now, was this the very next hand? It might have been. Or was it, you know, an hour later because of, you know, editing of the TV show? But I do think Phil tilted Hellmuth, and I do think this was an awesome hand, and I, you know, who doesn't love high stakes as a poker player? Who doesn't love high stakes poker? It's just great,
absolutely
great poker.
And it's because of this. Now we got to take a break. We'll come back and talk about another hand where it was Phil Ivey and Phil Hellmuth getting into it. We'll do that, and Joe Seebach is going to join us in the next half hour as well. We're live from Harris, St. Louis, with the final table. I'm Paul Harris. He is Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips, and he is the poker coach Joe McGowan. This is 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. We'll be right back.
From the poker room of Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is the final table with the St. Louis poker pro who beat over 13,000 other players in 2 years at the World Series of Poker main event. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watches. Dennis wearing one on his watch now, and I know this weekend at the NAPT you'll be getting a lot of questions about that watch.
I always do. Wherever I go, everybody asks me about the watch. It just it shows up. So it's nice to wear it at the table, and they start commenting about it. I love this watch on it. If you go to Reactor Watches, go online, go on to our thechipleader.com and click to do it. You can see their new Helium brand. You can see the titanium that they have. Again, this is the watch that they use over there across the seas that our soldiers are wearing all the time. This is the watch that will withstand being run over by a vehicle. It's a heck of a watch. It's attractive. It's affordable. It's about everything you want in a watch. You buy this watch, you'll never have to buy another one. I'm telling you that right now. Love this watch, and I will be wearing it out at the NAPT.
Reactor Watch is one of the sponsors here, and you can find them with a link on our website, thechipleader.com. Before we get back to our discussion of high-stakes poker, let's bring in our guest for today, Joe Seebach, who just got off a plane from Vegas to L.A., where he has got himself a new home. You know him from Poker Tonight, the website, the show that airs on Fox Sports Net. You also know him from the website Poker Road and the podcast that he's got on there. And you may have heard us talking about him in the past couple of weeks about some sick stuff that's going on in his life. Joe, welcome back to the final table. It's a pleasure having you on.
Okay. How are you, boys? How's it going?
Doing great. I'm telling you, I mean, the bet you had with Gavin about dressing the loser in a superhero costume, I can see that. I've heard of several of your other prop bets. They've been enjoyable and fun. What the heck is this about a tattoo? You've got
to be
kidding me.
I tried to get out of it. I unfortunately, I made, you know those moments in life when everything slows down and suddenly you've agreed to something that you don't really understand how it happened? that was very much what happened in this particular bet. but yeah, you know, sadly, this is actually our second tattoo bet. You know, Gavin's already lost one at the LAPC years back, where he had to get my initials tattooed on his back, which I'm proud to say are still there and shining. But this year, we felt like, you know, we needed to do it a little bigger. So, unfortunately, it's a three-way last longer bet at the LAPC coming up here in Los Angeles with myself, Gavin Smith, and Jeff Madsen. And the first one to bust has to get the faces of the other two players still remaining tattooed somewhere on his body. And then the next guy to bust has to get just the one player remaining. So it's I'm not going to say it's smart, but it is happening.
I mean, I know you're a young guy. You're, what, 30, 32, something like that. If you keep doing these things, you will run out of space, okay?
Well, I'm already running out of space. The funny thing is I'm the one guy out of the three of us who has a number of tattoos, so I should have the least to fear. But I think I'm also the one of us who has half of a brain, so I also understand that this is a terrible, terrible bet.
You know, I think you actually have the most to fear because you'd have to go around the rest of your life with people saying, is that Gavin Smith on you?
Oh, it's so bad. I called the boys up, you know, a couple weeks later, and I said, guys, this is a mistake. We've taken it too far. You know, I know that we do these prop bets. It's fun. It's good times. People enjoy it. This is too much. We need to call this thing off, but they absolutely refused. Like I said, they don't exactly have, you know, the brain power, I think, between the two of them to understand that this is a mistake. So we have to do it. I have no choice. I agree, and I have to honor that.
You better final table the LAPC, my friend.
Oh, man. Honestly, it's more important for me to last longer than those two than it is to win the event.
I do believe that. I really do.
Absolutely.
Give you a warning about ace-king here.
I know. Just fold it. Open fold. Any position.
There you go.
Now, the other sick thing I got to ask you about is this skydiving thing, which you're doing. I know you're doing some online qualifiers. I don't know if it's tonight or tomorrow night. You're doing one of these on your website, Ultimate Bet. But you're going to take somebody up and jump out of a plane over the Nevada desert. Have you ever done that before, Joe?
I have. I've been about four times, always tandem, so I've always been strapped to somebody else. But this time I'm going to go solo. So I'm a little nervous for myself, let alone the actual event. You know, it's going to be sort of a big deal to do that on my own for the first time. But yeah, you know, it's an amazing thing that, you know, I've put together with UB. We came up with this whole idea, let's have a tournament, let's have a free roll, actually. But, you know, something more than just money. Let's give people something a little more fun. So we're actually releasing the password this afternoon at 6 p.m. Pacific time on Twitter and Facebook and all of the good fun stuff. And then the actual tournament is tomorrow at the same time. So it's going to be Wednesday the 17th, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Totally free tournament. All you have to do is scoop the password, get in there, and then the winner gets to fly out to Vegas with a guest and jump out of a plane with me.
Well, guess what? I haven't done it for, oh boy, 15 years now or something like that. I used to skydive.
Yeah.
I've got 82 jumps under me.
No, so are you serious?
I absolutely guarantee it. I jumped out of Cessnas. I was an idiot. You go up there, you know, in a perfectly good plane and then say goodbye.
Now, what
kind of brain power
is
that?
Wow, that's amazing. I had no idea.
Yeah, well, I haven't done it for a number of years or anything like that, but it was a heck of a lot of fun.
Well, they were all tandem, weren't they?
There were none of them tandem.
What do you mean?
Wow.
Back when I started learning this thing, you didn't have tandem jumps.
You mean that the first time you jumped out of a plane, you weren't hooked up to somebody else?
No, they grabbed me and threw me out. But, you know, basically, I was not hooked up to anybody.
Oh, wow, that is pretty hardcore. I'm impressed.
To tell you the truth, this is a 30-second story. First time I did it, a little Cessna 182, I didn't have any problem. There were three of us in there ready to jump. Of course, they balanced it by weight. And, you know, I ended up next to the door to counterbalance the other two, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
First person out. They flip the door up. It throws up and catches under the wing. You look down. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, my gosh, right? But, you know, you got to be macho man. So I turned around, and I climbed out there, and I'm sitting there on the strut. And the guy said, jump. So I bent my knees, and I jumped. And my hand said, not a chance in hell. And I'm hanging on for dear life, waving through the air.
Well, Dennis, if you're not doing anything when we get this thing going, you're more than welcome to come out to Vegas and jump with us.
Give me the date on it. Who knows? I would love.
I haven't jumped for
close to 15 years, but that would be awesome. So.
Oh man, it'd be a blast. I think there's going to be a number of pros that I'm going to try to corral into this thing. So it should be a fun day if you choose to.
You know what we got to do, Siebes? We got to figure out some way to get audio equipment on you guys, and that way it can be on our show and on your Poker Road podcast, and we'll turn it into a major media event.
Okay, if you do these streams,
I love it. Let's do it. Let's put it together.
All right.
Tell us what's going on with Poker Tonight. It hasn't been on for a while. When are you guys coming back on?
Poker Tonight, we took a couple-week hiatus, but we're going to be shooting the first week in March again. So we'll be up and running. Everything is going to be good. We're looking to, you know, we feel like the first season was a success for all of us. We're very green going into it. We'd never done a television show. But the second season, you know, if you're not improving, then, you know, you're just kind of standing in the same place. So we intend to do a lot of different things, you know, take what we learned the first season and improve upon it. But people can look for it to pick up again the first week in March. So we'll be back and swinging.
Okay, we'll look for that on Fox Sportsnet on Wednesday nights.
Oh, and I've got to ask, you talked about before,
what's
the fact that we're down at the PCA, I've got to ask you about this. How the devil do you end up with this many people on Twitter? Somebody said you had over a million followers or something. Holy cow.
I've over a million. Basically, you know, they Twitter decides, you know, people that they want to suggest to users, and they scooped me up kind of early on, you know, being one of the few poker players that were on in the early days. And just put me on that list. So, you know, me, Ashton, you know, all those guys kind of, when people first join, we're kind of suggested to them, and then they get to choose, you know, who they want to pick from there. So, but you have to still be interesting. You know, you still have to write things to sort of keep people engaged from that point, obviously.
Well, I was afraid you were going to say you're going to give each of your followers a small space for a tattoo or something.
Yeah. I guess that's an option, huh? It'd be a scary one, but it's an option.
You know, I reluctantly convinced Dennis to start tweeting. He does it every once in a while, mostly from when he's in events like at the PCA or I'm sure this weekend at the NAPT. But you actually, you embrace social media big time. We talked about this when we saw you last summer out at the Rio at the World Series of Poker. This is a huge thing for you, both with Twitter and with the Poker Road website and the forums and all that sort of stuff. But I hear, and you can verify this or not, Joe, is it true that you're letting your Twitter followers help design your new house in Hermosa Beach?
I absolutely am. It's something I'm so lucky to have been hooked up with. Kristen Cunningham, who is sort of a big-time designer that lives out here in Venice, California, who's done work with Rachel Ray. She's done stuff with Oprah, AOL, you know, on TV. I mean, so much stuff. And we just have common friends. And she really, really liked the idea of getting involved in that way. And so we've kind of hopped on and decided to, rather than have her come in and design the whole thing, she kind of sends me things. We talk about it on Twitter and Facebook to weigh in and say what they like or don't like. You know, people have sent me so many things, you know, tables and couches and just a whole host of things that they think, you know, would be cool. And, you know, we've kind of tried to incorporate that stuff as much as we can.
How much of it actually is cool?
It's great, actually. It's, you know, the stuff that people have sent in has been really, really awesome, to be honest with you. So I certainly can't complain in any way, you know, shape or form. And she's amazing. I mean, I'm so lucky to have somebody like Kristen, you know, be able to come in and give me her expertise. Because let's face it, I mean, I really don't know what the hell I'm doing when it comes to that kind of stuff. So really, I needed the help.
I guarantee you've got to, once you get this house done, you've got to have me out there. I'll bring the wine or something, but I've got to check this out.
Oh, I'd love to. Oh, man, the place is incredible. I'm so lucky. Right on the beach, right here in Hermosa. I mean, it really, you know, especially with a guy like me that just has so many random things going on that, you know, anytime I get a little too stressed out, I just go for a walk on the beach, and it feels like a brand new day.
Sweet. Okay.
But, yeah, you're more than welcome. Anytime, Dennis.
Absolutely. I'll take you up on that one. There's no doubt about it. This summer, I was lucky enough to be able to play with you in the main event. I think you finished, like, 56th or something like that on it. You played the short stack as well as I've seen anybody play in a long time on that. So I got a question.
I appreciate it. Unfortunately, I didn't have any choice.
That's true. Being short stack is never a voluntary thing. They don't ask you ahead of time. By the way, everybody else is going to start with 30,000 in chips. Would you like to start with 8?
Yeah, but all kidding aside. You know, so many people, when they get short stack, they get impatient or they overplay hands. There's so many things you can do wrong when you're short stack. And you didn't. You kept it together. You kept playing solid poker the whole bit on it. So, you know, that's just, I was very impressed with that. So I've got a favor.
Well, I really, really appreciate it.
Well, it's the truth, so it makes it simple. We've got our first major tournament coming up here in St. Louis, a circuit event for the WSOP. It's coming up the first 2 weeks of April. We'll have a lot of St. Louisans who will be playing their first major tournament here. Do you have one or two hints or words of wisdom or something that we can give to these people here for their first tournament when they're coming in to play a $5,000 event for the first time?
Well, I think from a technical aspect, there's a couple things, you know, that you can do. Find somebody that plays a lot of poker. So one of the things I see that the mistakes that people make often is sort of the bet sizing. You know, a lot of people fall into these traps where, you know, they bet certain amounts with certain hands, or they're betting too much. So that way, you know, when they're bluffing or when they're just trying to pick up a pot, they're actually losing too much in those situations. So pay careful attention to your bet sizing. And other than that, you know, just play your game. And I think that we all kind of say this to a fault. You know, so often players that aren't aggressive will try to be aggressive, and ones that, you know, that are typically aggressive will try to slow down, and it kind of trips them up a little. So, you know, be the player that you are, I think, is very, very important, especially in the early, you know, sort of lifetime of being a tournament player. You got to sort of define that and go with it.
Do you find that people who are moving up from smaller tournaments, like, for instance, sitting behind us here today, there are 60 people playing a Tuesday afternoon tournament here in St. Louis, and, you know, a lot of people will come down to Harrah's here and play in 50, 60, 70-person events. There's going to be a big jump up for them when they're playing in a field of 300, 400, 500, 600, 700 or more people. Is there a different strategy involved in there because the rounds are going to be longer and the chip stacks are going to be deeper?
Well, definitely. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head right there, is that, you know, the rounds are longer and the chip stacks are deeper, but the amount of players in the tournament, I've always been a proponent of thinking that really doesn't matter. Because really, you just have to play against the players at your table, whether that's, you know, nine other people or you know, eight other people. You just have to focus on them and play the best that you can play against them. But you're absolutely right about, you know, the longer levels. Typically, that's going to mean they're going to be able to take a lot more time. They're not going to have to get in there and ram and jam, you know, as much as they might have. So that's something to pay attention to without me actually taking a look at the structure and seeing it. But always be very, very aware. I mean, probably one of the biggest things I could say to tournament players is everyone's so big on this concept of average. You know, where are you in relation to the average? And really, for me, that is it's a completely irrelevant number. I mean, it really doesn't matter. The number that matters is your stack in relation to the blinds. And obviously, then you want to look at the structure to know when you need to speed up and when you need to slow down. But certainly don't pay attention to that average number. I've seen crazy, even this year, Dennis, in the main event, I mean, yep. We were getting down to maybe 200 players left, and the average was this really, really high number, but then the stacks in relation to the blinds were still very big, and you would see people just ram and jam with two sevens getting it in for something like 40 or 50 big blinds in these crazy spots. So just be careful of that. There's no need for it.
I think so. You get caught up in the game. You get caught up in the bets. You see somebody else making this large bet, and you feel like, oh, I've got to do it or something. You're absolutely right. Number of big blinds, you need to keep that in your mind at all times. No doubt about it. Words of wisdom here, guys.
Yeah.
Great stuff, Joe. it is always a pleasure talking to you. Good luck with the skydiving and, more importantly, with the tattoo bet. Every time
tell
I think
me about it.
I just
tell me about
sick.
it.
we appreciate your time today, and we look forward to seeing you again at the series this summer.
All right, boys. Take care. Anytime. Always happy to come on.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
Joe Seebach. Follow him online on Twitter and on Poker Road and, pretty much every place else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The guy's everywhere online. This is the Final Table with Paul Harrah's and Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips. And we'll get back to the poker coach, Joe McGowan, in just a moment. This portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance. We're members, and you should be, too. Not just because it's for the cool kids at the cool kids table, but for everybody who plays at any table, any poker table, anywhere in the United States. You need to be a member of the Poker Players Alliance to help support the game we all love. We've got lobbyists in Washington who are working in Congress every single day to overturn the UIGEA. We've got lobbyists in state capitals all across the country working in those state houses to change the laws in various places. They're working in Florida to get rid of that ridiculous $100 rule we talked about last week. They're working all over the U.S. to protect home game players. If you've never set foot in a casino, never played online, but you get together with a bunch of people in your basement, you could get a knock on the door from a sheriff one day in many parts of this country. They do crack down on it, even in Texas, the state that invented Hold'em. But the PPA is there to fight for you, and they can only do it with more members because that brings in not only a bigger membership but also more membership dollars, and it only costs $20 to join. For details, go to the website thePPA.org, and we'll be right back with the Final Table live from Harrah's St. Louis on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Dennis Phillips was third in the 2008 World Series of Poker main event and 45th in the 2009 World Series of Poker main event. After those two deep runs, what's he going to do this year? Right now, he's talking poker with Paul Harris at the Final Table from Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
With the poker coach Joe McGowan joining us by phone, we were talking earlier about the debut episode of High Stakes Poker on Sunday night, and particularly the play of one Phil Hellmuth. And we only have about 3 minutes here, guys, so I want to quickly go through another hand with the two Phils going against each other, Hellmuth and Ivy. And as we were talking before, Phil Hellmuth had been getting beaten up. Half of his stack of $200,000 was gone. In this hand, he raises to $2,000 with the Jack of Hearts, Five of Hearts, and Phil Ivey calls behind him King of Hearts, Nine of Hearts. There are two other guys in the hand who turn out to be inconsequential to this. When the flop comes with two hearts, 7-6-4, the Seven of Hearts and Four of Hearts and the Six of Diamonds. Ivey, whose first act, bets $6,000. After the others fold, Phil Hellmuth makes it $26,000. He's got a gut shot straight, he's got an open-ended straight draw and a flush draw, but the flush draw doesn't count because Phil Ivey's got the bigger flush draw. Phil races it to $26,000. Ivy thinks, then he calls. The turn is the King of Diamonds, giving Ivy a pair and his flush draw. Ivy checks. Phil shoves the rest of his stack, about $82,000. Ivy thinks for about 3 seconds and calls. And Phil says, "You want to run it three times?" And Ivy says, "No." I mean, it's an 86-14 favorite there. He doesn't want to run it three times. Once will be enough. Sure enough, the Ten of Hearts comes on the river, and Phil Hellmuth is done for the day. He picks up, leaves, and no one even says goodbye. Joe, give me some analysis of the way that hand was played.
Well, every time Phil Hellmuth had a big hand, you know, he lost. And then when he tried to screw around with lousy hands, he got clobbered. So he really did get unlucky. But again, like his personality and his deal, he brings a lot of this on himself. You know, I don't think he played the best, but he did flop a big hand with a horrible starting hand. There was some interesting stuff there. You know, when Ivy asks Phil, you know, how much do you have left, and Phil Hellmuth says 90. You know, two things there. Usually, when someone has a monster, they're not too nervous about how many chips you have left. They usually don't ask that question, so that's not a lockout. You know, phenomenal. But I do think that's a little bit of a tell. And then when Phil Hellmuth says 90, he really only had, I believe, about 82.
Right.
So again, there's a little bit of a tell. And again, please don't, you know, go to battle off of just these, you know, little tells that I'm giving out. But I do think those are two tells there. But you know, I think Ivy played the hand great, and I think Phil got unlucky. But he's in there with the Jack Five. The other guys, you know, Durr makes Jack Five turn into $200,000 somehow. You know, Hellmuth tries it, he gets clobbered. You know, so
yeah,
that's the way it went.
Well, actually coming in with it in his raise when he had the open end and the flush draw. But then he bets $82,000 into a pot of about $60,000 also,
yep,
in this thing, which indicates to me that he doesn't have the monster hand, doesn't have, you know, could very likely be on a draw on it because he's trying to push him out of it. So I don't know. There's just so many things on this, and he's drawn so thin then because he had drawn to an 8 or a 3, but he couldn't even be a heart 8 or 3.
Right, he's got that. Six outs.
He's got six outs is all he ends up having on this thing.
Yeah.
You know, he's dropped it down to a 12% chance to win this thing.
Well, I think the lesson here, well, we have multiple lessons. One is, yeah, that Phil Hellmuth may keep saying he's the best hold'em player in the world, but every time he goes on High Stakes Poker or Poker After Dark, he seems to walk out first with no money.
Well, I mean, the last hand that we had on the turn, we have him just smooth calling at 11,000. It's a move for a trap, which,
yep,
I guess is what he was trying to do.
Right.
Again, you re-raise there, you find out where you're at, and you end up saving money in the long run.
The other lesson,
I just don't know.
The other lesson we learned here is it doesn't matter whether you're playing against guys like this or regular tournament players or cash game players. King deuce, jack five, even if they're suited, not the greatest hands to get involved in. You could end up losing your stack, and then you're in the car banging on the dashboard all the way home. We all know that story. We're all out of time. I'm Paul Harris. For Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips and the poker coach Joe McGowan, next week we will be at the Venetian at the NAPT with a special show for you from there. Thanks to Harris St. Louis for sponsoring this show and making it possible on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.